science is interesting, and if you don't agree, you can fuck off.
Retracted research. A 16-year-old paper
yep.
has been retracted that was based on a now debunked autism vaccine relationship study.
Indeed, yes.
Tell us more.
Well, the way that science works, the way that we, I guess, show our results to the world, is that we publish. And so we publish papers and they get published in journals and people read the journals and then they could then base their sort of future research on the stuff that's gone before, and so therefore they will credit the work that has been done before them, et cetera, and they'll reference that, and that's the way that science progresses. So, you know, as Isaac Newton said, you know, we're all standing on the shoulders of giants. So once a paper is in the literature, it's pretty much there for good unless there's something horribly, horribly wrong with it. And it so happens in 1998 that Andrew Wakefield, who you probably may well have heard of, published a paper saying that there was a link between vaccines and autism. There were a whole lot of things wrong with that particular paper. Number one, he didn't have ethical clearance for it. Mm. Number two, there was a very small sample size of 12 children, and these were not randomised, so these were self-selected. So that really doesn't work for stats and all that.
12 is not
a large number. Yep. And Wakefield was funded by lawyers for the family of the children.
Okay, so, well, how did this get published in the first place?
I thought you needed peer review.
That's a really good question. And yes, you do need peer review. And yes, it was published in The Lancet, which is, you know, Britain's best, yeah. you know, medical journal. So unfortunately, some stuff does slip through. I know.
Do you think it's because it was considered like, I don't know, it was like different? It was a different approach? It was groundbreaking or something? Like creating a correlation at a time where we needed an explanation or something?
Well, what's the quote? Remarkable results require remarkable evidence, I think. And, you know, somebody reading that would hopefully have thought, wow, you know, this is pretty amazing. Mm. But where's the proof? So whoever peer reviewed this really didn't do the job. And there's normally sort of two or three people peer review papers. So somehow it sneaked through, which is sad. And that led to a whole lot of rubbish over the sort of intervening
years. What was the effect of this? People would have taken this and been like, right, I'm not going to vaccinate.
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, it's still,
yes.
It's still current.
It's still ongoing.
People still link it.
It really is terrible, you know, that people still believe this, even though it's been retracted. But
okay. Oh, yes, you've got a bat.
Yeah, I've got
a question.
Yeah. No, fire away.
Well, this was 88. When was it retracted?
This was 98. It was retracted in 2010, so it took an awful
long
time.
Took a long time.
An awful long time for it to be retracted, but it was. Now, the trouble is that even though it's been retracted, it still gets referenced in the literature by other papers. Okay?
Oh.
Yeah. Hmm. Now, a retraction, back in the days of sort of hard copy journals where they were just printed.
Oh, so you just couldn't find it anymore? They just remove it from every copy.
No, but see, they can't remove it from a hard copy journal. So all through the libraries of the world, there will still be copies of this, and nobody will know it's retracted. However, in the electronic days now,
if you look it up,
if you look it up online, it'll have a big retracted watermark through it.
Okay,
so that tells you that it's been retracted. But the trouble is, there was a paper that made big use of this as a reference paper. It was a review paper, which looks at the literature and sort of reviews it down to a sort of a concise thing that everyone can read. And the trouble with that was that it relied very, very heavily on Wakefield's paper and basically sort of stating what was in that paper as fact, which we now know that it's not. And so this was a paper published in 2002. And again, it was sort of appearing a lot on sort of Google searches proof of the link between vaccine and autism. So
is there not some sort of legal responsibility to then go and retract all of those, not necessarily all the other papers, but then have that watermark through the reference?
No, there's not. There's no legal responsibility at all. It's completely up to the publishers. So the publishers of the journal choose whether or not they are going to retract it.
Okay.
Because it's their baby, basically. They own the copyright. So you sign over the copyright to them as soon as you publish a paper. So it's their decision. So, of course, they'll make that decision based on, you know, evidence, hopefully, and submissions from, you know, interested parties and stuff. And that's how this one came about, because sort of somebody was writing a paper on this sort of stuff, found this old paper in the literature and thought, no, this, you know, this can't be. We can't let this be still in the literature. And so even though it was published in 2002, it's only just been retracted sort of in the last month and
properly.
Properly, yes. So if you now go and look at it up, it's still there on the website, but it does have a big retracted watermark through
it. But there could potentially be more papers written with that as a reference that haven't been retracted yet.
And that's the problem. That's why you can't have... Well, that's the problem with having crap in the literature, because it still gets referenced, because authors are lazy, because they don't go back and look at the original paper. They just say, oh, shit, this paper referenced it, so I'll reference it because it must be relevant to the sort of stuff I'm doing, et cetera, et cetera.
And if you just trust in the system as well, you kind of hope that if it's there and it's being referenced, then that's fine.
Yeah,
it's been peer reviewed by three different people.
So. Yep, and they got it wrong. They got it spectacularly wrong in this case. So, I guess you can sort of say that this is the self-correcting nature of science that us scientists always sort of go on about so proudly. But by crikey, it takes a while.
Mm. Yeah, in terms of the turnover, I guess is the issue here, right? Because if it gradually the papers that reference it will end up not referencing it anymore. Yeah.
And you know, Wakefield's paper's 20 years old now, and sort of in scientific terms, that's, you know, it's pretty much a dinosaur, enormous things have happened in the past 20 years, so hopefully it's just sort of going to die a natural death, and any papers that have referenced it and are themselves referenced hopefully will sort of go the same way. But
I do like that it's still available to see. That sort of, I guess, a paper trail of change,
yep,
and new experiments and new discoveries and new proof, I guess, new evidence. But we can go back and you can see that at one point.
Yes.
I mean, this is not probably the best example, given this is quite an outlier.
Yeah, but, you know, I guess it sort of serves as possibly a warning to people who are thinking of, you know, let's see what I can get away with publishing, because the way that it works now, it's there forever and a day. You are now the publisher or the author of a retracted study, and nobody wants to be the author of a retracted study because that doesn't really reflect.
Do you think
that
would not happen now? Are there more?
It still happens. It really does.
People publish.
Yep.
Not 100%.
People knowingly publish fake data. Yep.
Why? What's in it for them?
Because they need to get ahead. Because they want to get a good job. They want to probably get an academic job out of it. And there are numerous, sadly, examples of like PhD students have just made up results that their supervisor wanted, and they have published them in the very, very best journals, which then basically sets them up for life, because then they go on and do a good postdoc and then they get a good academic job, et cetera, et cetera. But they're going to get caught in the end. They just are. Mm. That's what they
do. They though?
Yes, oh yes.
There are people that are onto this sort of thing and they do monitor it?
Yes, most definitely.
But is it 40 years later once you've already been set
up? No, not really. Because if you make an astounding discovery, then the first thing that people are going to try and do is replicate it.
And check it.
Yeah. So probably people get away with a lot of crap in a lot of poor journals, but that's not where you want to be publishing if you want to make your name. You want to publish good stuff in Nature and Science and all of these really, really good journals. They're going to be checked.
So bottom line is that good journals should probably be a bit more, like paying a bit more attention to what they're publishing.
Well, they, you know,
you expect them to.
Yeah, every time something like this happens, you know, they get burnt, their reputation suffers, so they don't want this sort of thing to happen. So I, in a perverse sort of way, this probably does science some good, because it sort of tightens up on the rules of peer review, et cetera, et cetera, would be my feeling on this. So that's the story anyway. So it is now out of the literature.
Retracted.
Literally. Sorry.
Nice. Okay. Yeah. Moving into germs on hand dryers, which is, I feel like this is not really a new thing. We probably realise that hand dryers are probably quite filthy.
But did we? This all came as news to me, I've got to say.
Well, because you think that because you've washed your hands before, whatever's coming out of your hand in the hand dryer is washed thing. So what, bacteria-free?
Well, the whole reason for these things, where they were probably sort of touted as being really, really healthy or whatever, because you didn't have to touch anything.
Then,
you know, no touch hand dryers.
Yeah.
You know? And so that must be a good thing, surely. But
okay, but it's not.
But it's not. So about 4 or so years ago, there was a bunch of folk in England and France and Italy, and they decided to look at this question of whether or not these air hand dryers or jet dryers or whatever you want to call them were in fact better than just using good old paper towels. And so they did some sort of laboratory experiments, so not sort of real world ones, and they showed that, yes, in fact, paper towels were much better. And in fact, that these jet dryers, what they succeeded in doing was simply blowing bacteria off your hands into the air, onto neighbouring surfaces, and about 27 times more bacteria in the air than you'd get with just using paper towels. Okay, yeah. And the root cause of all this is apparently people don't know how to wash their hands properly.
Right. So
if you have improperly washed hands, you throw them in these air dryers, and that just blows all of the bugs all over the show.
So it isn't necessarily the concept of hand dryers. The problem lies with the washing of the hands.
Seemingly, yes.
Like people that just put their hands under the water.
Give them a quick dribble.
Don't actually put any sanitizer or anything.
Yeah. So they have recently looked into this in a real-world situation. So this year they were studying hospital bathrooms in hospitals
Pretty
in England.
Important.
Yeah, very. So in England and in France and in Italy. And so the way they did it was a 12-week period, so 12-week study. In the first 4 weeks, they would have one of paper towels or the jet dryers available in the hospital bathroom. Then they had a 2-week break for everything to sort of clear up, and then they would change it. So they would then go for the opposite one. They'd have the jet dryer present if it was the paper towels present first up. That for 4 weeks, and then another 2-week break, and then they go back to the original for another 4 weeks. So this is a 12-week intensive study, and what they would do was they would monitor the air for bacteria and monitor all of the and swab the surfaces and stuff and have a look at how much bacteria were in the
is
air
it like every
on
day,
surfaces.
Every
Yeah. So, you know, this is pretty intensive stuff. And what they found was, yes, the same thing, that when you had the air dryer there, that you had significantly more bacterial levels than you had with the paper towels.
Okay. Like
in Italy, we're talking 100 times more, France 33 times more, England 22 times more.
So Italians can't wash their hands properly.
Or let's not make generalizations, guys.
No, I know the French and the Italians don't get on. I know, but that's a bit
No,
harsh.
We're also terrible at this. It's fine.
But okay, let's if there is more bacteria in the air, technically, the bacteria is not really on your hands.
Yeah.
So regardless of which way you dry your hands, you yourself are clean.
I don't think that's the problem.
I'm just pointing that out.
But it can become quite dangerous in a hospital situation
when you're in that space.
How do you call those? Those nosocomial.
The super bugs and stuff. So.
Well, then you can get infected.
So anyone going into that space may pick up
the
bacteria, regardless of whether your hands are clean or not.
And that can and create complications.
And, you know, all you got to do is touch something and then, you know, and you've got it. And that's not good.
Aren't we at the point though where we're aware that, you know, getting rid of like the entirety of germs on our hands is a bad thing? Shouldn't we be maintaining
in a hospital? It's a good thing.
Some bacterial stuff.
Yeah, I know. And there's a lot of debate about sort of this whole antibacterial sort of soaps and things like that. And yeah, I'm sure you're right. You know, there seem to be so many more allergies these days than there were when I was a kid and everything. And this is sort of being ascribed to overuse of these sort of cleaners and stuff. So,
but yeah, I see your point in a hospital.
However, now there's a big however to this.
Okay.
So reading the paper, the actual paper that this was published in, you go to the bottom.
Wow, you do some good research for this.
Well, hey, I don't just sort of read it 5 minutes beforehand and then rock up. Hell no, you know.
Right. Don't just look at the headline.
This is my Wednesday morning's gone. You know?
In the paper.
So you read the paper and right at the bottom, it said that the research was funded by the European Tissue Symposium.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
People that have an interest in selling paper towels.
There you go.
Wow.
Yeah, wow indeed. Okay.
This is not a new thing, though. This would happen all over. Yeah. We've just talked about that in the past story.
But for goodness sake, we've got to sort of be seen to be above all of this possible, you know, corruption or whatever you want to call it, or, you know, favours for money and all, you know.
Seems to be happening in politics, though, doesn't it?
Oh, so. Bugger politics. We don't care about politics anymore. We're at science. But, you know,
science is political.
Well, it shouldn't be. That's the thing.
But,
science
shouldn't be. Surprised that it isn't like an independent thing and that you can have private corporations that actually pay for things. Although you'd like to think that the system in place for methodology and all that in scientific research would prevent you from being subject to outside influence, hopefully.
But you know, the question's always going to be there. If you're funded by somebody who's got a vested interest in the results that you get, then the results that you get are always going to be open to question, always.
Yeah.
And you don't want that. And especially if there's, you know, these are pretty important results, I would have said. And so they're, you know, these people are advocating for basically removing jet dryers in hospital bathrooms. Putting,
okay, but if given these results are important, is it not good that the results are there, regardless of how they got there?
Well, yes and no. You know, that now the dryer industry are probably going to go out and do their own bloody study. You know how it works.
They're
gonna
do
it's like the tobacco
one.
Industry. Yeah, of course. And it's
never ending circle.
It is.
You never find out what's actual.
What is the truth? The truth about it. Okay, yeah, let's finish on a positive.
Okay,
perhaps.
Yes.
What
yes.
is the breakthrough award?
Well, indeed, I was sort of unaware that these things existed as well, but these have been going since 2012. The Breakthrough Prize, it's called. And this is funded by such people as Sergey Brin from Google and Mark Zuckerberg from We All Know Where. Mm-hmm. And so there are maximum of nine of these awards given out every year for life sciences, fundamental physics and mathematics. And up to three people can win these each year. And they are worth $3 million a pop.
So each person?
Each person.
So that's
indeed.
$9 million a year?
Yeah.
Where's this money coming from?
Well, it's $9 million per subject, so it's $27 million for the whole lot. Yeah, I know. Well, I think Facebook and Google are doing rather well.
So they have lots of money to invest in their research.
We're still in the same thing as what we were just talking about.
Exactly. It's not that positive.
Who's investing in this stuff?
Well, somebody's got to give the prizes, don't they? But yeah, no, I know. But, you know, as you say, this is worth more than the Nobel Prize. The total prize pool for each Nobel Prize is $1 million, I think, about $1 million US at the moment, just a touch less. So this is worth significantly more than the Nobel Prize. Instead of being awarded by sort of the King of Sweden or whoever actually does the thing at the big dinner, this one was hosted by Pierce Brosnan.
Oh.
On the National Geographic Channel.
What?
Yes. Yeah, I think they need maybe a higher caliber of host. So apparently it's been hosted by Seth MacFarlane of Family Guy fame for the last few years.
Oh, so they want
Family
to
Guy's
it.
Quite funny.
I do enjoy
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
But it's not, you know,
it's,
serious.
Yeah, it's hardly highbrow, is it? Let's be honest.
Well, I guess they're, I don't know.
But anyway, so there's a researcher by the name of Xiaowei Zhuang at Harvard. And Harvard, for goodness sake. Sound like I live in Boston. And she invented this thing called super resolution imaging, which was about 10 or so years ago. And basically what she did was to allow us to see things that we shouldn't be able to see, really.
Really little things.
Really little things, okay. Normally to see really little things, we'd use a light microscope.
Mm-hmm.
And so you look down and you see these, you know, amazing things blown up and everything, but there's a limit to what you can see. There's a limit to the size of things that you can see in a light microscope simply because of the wavelength of light, okay? And you can't see anything smaller than the wavelength of light, which is around about, it goes from 400 to 700 nanometers.
So very, very small.
Very, very small, okay? So in order to actually see smaller than that, we can use things like electron microscopes and stuff like that, you know, which are all sort of an indirect way of seeing these things. But she came up with a really, really nice, really, really nice way of doing this. She'd get these molecules that she wanted to look at, and she'd put little fluorescent molecules. She'd attach these fluorescent molecules to these other molecules, okay? Now, we might not be able to see things smaller than 200 nanometers or 400 nanometers or whatever, but what we can see is flashes of light. Okay. We're really, really good at seeing flashes of light. And that's what happens with these fluorescent molecules. They flash. Okay. You hit them with a laser beam and they actually flash. And they do it randomly. Okay. So you don't know which one's going to flash at any given time. So if you've got a collection of these molecules, you want to know what their shape is, you just hit them with a laser and they flash. And they do it again. And they do it again. And a different one does it again. And a different one does it again, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And all these little flashes of light, until you build up basically a big picture of what the whole thing looks like. It's really, really, really nice. And again, it's one of these things that's sort of obvious in hindsight. You think, shit, I could have thought of that, but didn't, you know.
Don't know. That sounds pretty complicated.
Really, really elegant stuff.
And also drawing it, wouldn't it be... I mean, if they're flashing randomly, you wouldn't know when that's going to stop or...
No, but you've got your little detector, which will... You know, sort that out for you.
Okay. So you're mapping them out.
Yeah, basically. Okay. Yeah. And it's all to do with visible light. So you're using visible light To be able to see very, very small things.
May I just ask what the point is?
Or what this will be used for?
Yeah.
To look at things essentially in vivo or in vitro, really. Okay. So if you're going to do sort of electron microscopy, you've got to take your sample and you've got to prepare it and you've got to put it in a vacuum and everything, blah, 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 blah. This you can use on living things. So all you've got to do is tag your living molecules or whatever, with these fluorescent molecules, just attach them to the molecule itself, and then away you go. So you can sort of do real-time monitoring of what's going on in things like cells and stuff like that. It really is amazing. Seriously impressive.
Also, yep. I guess what it's for is winning $9 million.
Indeed, yeah. Indeed, yes.
But can I ask, do the people that win these prizes, mm-hmm. do they have to use that money for further
research?
Not the Nobel Prizes. No, they don't have to.
They just use that for life.
Yeah. And Jocelyn Bell Burnell, who Marcus would have spoken about a few weeks ago. So she was the PhD student who didn't get the Nobel Prize and her boss did.
Yeah.
So she just got given one of these, a special one of these, a month or two ago, I think.
Job.
And Marcus spoke about this, and she's giving the whole lot away.
Whoa.
She's giving the whole lot away to research.
Giving it away
$3 million US bucks.
To kind of like help
women
with,
in physics, I think.
Help with diversity.
Yep, yep.
In the research.
Absolutely stunning. Absolutely stunning. What a philanthropist, for goodness sake. So
caller, hello.
Ooh. Hi. I'm just a little confused. If you can't see these things until you've got this light on them, mm-hmm. how do you put the fluorescent light on them?
Good point.
You just shine the light at them, basically. You know they're in your test tube somewhere or whatever it is that you're looking at. And so once you've stuck your little fluorescent molecules onto them.
But that's what he's asking. Yeah, how do you put the fluorescent?
Oh, that's easy. That's just chemistry. You just mix them up.
So you just mix it with
You basically just mix it with your fluorescent molecule. You get a chemical reaction. The fluorescent molecule sticks to it. And then once that's stuck to it, then you can tell exactly where it is.
All right. Brilliant. Thank you, caller.
Okay.
Thank you.
And we should probably leave it there.
We shall, except for one thing, if I may, or two things. Okay.
Yes,
so speaking of winning, could I just very humbly say that the Brofessors won the National Pub Quiz Championship for the second year in a row.
I'll make sure to pass that on to Will.
On Saturday, because Will will be impressed by that.
Will be very impressed.
And also yesterday, it's the Earth's birthday yesterday.
Earth's birthday?
The Earth's birthday, because the Earth was created on the 23rd of October 4004 BC, according to Bishop Usher.
When you say created.
Created. Yes.
As in the Big Bang.
No. The big God.
Oh.
Yes. Yeah. So we look back through the Bible, all the begatting and begatting and begatting and begatting, and figured it out. It was 4004
BC. I don't know my religious history.
Sarcastic here.
Would I be sarcastic?
Okay, we're going to wrap it up. A couple of people have texted in though. Hot air must multiply germs, gag, poop germs. Yes. Perhaps making all toilet exit doors push, not pull, would be a simple improvement, especially in hospitals.
Somebody's thinking. I like that.
And lots of scientific research affects results anyway, for fuck's sake. We'll leave it there. See you next week, Alan.
See you.
That was Dear Science.